Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradhari. Jaya Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudirayat Nashta Praeshva Badreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Yutama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. I fear the class I prepared is quite a bit longer than the time we have available, so I'm skipping some of the formalities. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is Canto 3, Chapter 20, Conversations Between Maitreya and Vidura, Text Number 1. Shaunaka Uvacha Mahim Pratishtam Adyasya Mahim Pratishtam Adyasya Saute Svayam Bhuvo Manu Saute Svayam Bhuvo Manu Kanyanvatishta Dvarani Kanyanvatishta Dvarani Margaya Vara Janmanam. Thank you. Margaya Vara Janmanam. Shaunaka Uvacha. Mahim Pratishtam Adyasya. Saute Svayam Bhuvo Manu. Kanyanvatishta Dvarani Margaya Vara Janmanam. Please chant. Shaunaka Uvacha Rahim Pratishtam Adyasya Saute Svayam Bhuvo Manuhu Anyad Patishtad Varani Kanyadvatishta dvarani. Margayavara janmanam. Mahim pratishtam adyasya. Saute svayam bhuvo manu. Kanyanvatishta dvarani. Mahim pratishta madhyasya saute svayam bhuvo manuhu kanyadvatishta dvarani magayavara janmanam. Gentlemen. Mahim pratishta madhyasya saute svayam bhuvo manuhu kanyanvatishta dvarani margaya vara janmanam. Translation. Sri Saunaka inquired, O Suta Goswami, after the earth was again situated in its orbit, what did Svayambhuva Manu do to show the path of liberation to persons who were to take birth later on? Purport. The appearance of the Lord as the first boar incarnation occurred during the time of Svayambhuva Manu, whereas the present age is in the period of Vaivashvatu Manu. Each Manu's period lasts 72 times the cycle of four ages, and one cycle of ages equals 4,320,000 solar years. Thus, 4,320,000 times 72 solar years is the reign of one Manu. For those of you who can't do math that quickly in your head, that's 311,040,000 years is the reign of one Manu. In each Manu's period, there are many changes in many ways, and there are 14 Manus within the day of Brahma. It is understood here that Manu creates scriptural regulations for the salvation of conditioned souls who come to the material world for material enjoyment. The Lord is so kind that any soul who wants to enjoy in this material world is given full facility for enjoyment. And at the same time, he is shown the path of salvation. Saunaka Rishi therefore inquired from Suta Goswami, what did Svayambhuva Manu do after the reinstatement of the earth in its orbital situation? Om Angyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. So it's interesting that the title of this chapter starts off, well, the title of the chapter is Conversations Between Maitreya and Vidura, but the chapter starts off with Saunaka Rishi and Suta Goswami, and so that's something that maybe requires some explanation. And the explanation is that the Bhagavatam, the Srimad Bhagavatam that we read, is a series of nested conversations. That means it starts off with one person narrating a story that was narrated by some other person at some other time, who is narrating some other story that was narrated by some other story, narrated by some other person at some other time. So the Bhagavatam that we read starts off in the first canto with a conversation between Suta Goswami and Saunaka Rishi, who is representing the sages of Naimisharanya, who had all gathered. They had been performing austerities and yajnas and yogic practices for many, many years. And it's said that all they reaped from their practices was the smoke from the fire yajna. And, you know, the smoke from the fire yagya is not exactly what we're trying to obtain from the fire yagya. So they were a little frustrated in all of their religious practices. It wasn't quite getting them where they wanted to go. And so they asked Sutta Goswami a series of questions. And the question that's relevant to this verse is, what is the essence of all religious scriptures? That was one of the six questions they asked them. We won't talk about the other six too much today. And to answer this question, Sutta Goswami started narrating a story that he had heard previously, which was a conversation between Sukadev Goswami and King Parikshit. King Parikshit had also executed his both material and his spiritual duties as a king for many, many decades, but he was ultimately also frustrated with his endeavors. He was not frustrated by his own endeavors, but he was cursed, as we know, by the son of a brahmana who thought that King Parikshit had disrespected his father, and so he cursed King Parikshit. And so despite all of the glories of King Parikshit's reign, and you know, what would we do for a leader like King Parikshit today? King Parikshit was also ultimately frustrated in his endeavors. He was cursed to meet what would otherwise seem to be a rather horrible death, the bite of a snake bird. Yeah, nobody wants to get bitten by a snake bird, right? Never. And so Sukadev Goswami started answering King Parikshit's queries, which were very much in line with the queries of the sages of Naimisharanya. And in so doing, he also narrated many discussions that had taken place previously in the universe, either in recent history or long past history, including conversations that Vidura, who is the uncle of the Pandavas, had with a number of great sages. The third canto, which we're sort of in the second half of now, started off with conversations between Vidura and Uddhava, who is the cousin of Krishna and a close confidant of Krishna. During this conversation, Maitreya had a whole bunch of questions, and so there's a theme developing here, which is that devotees ask a lot of questions. And in the course of Vidura's conversations with Uddhava, Uddhava recommended to Vidura that he go see the sage Maitreya. And so Vidura trekked around until he found Maitreya, and then he started asking Maitreya a whole bunch of questions. And in the course of Vidura asking Maitreya a whole bunch of questions, Maitreya narrated the story of Varahadev, the boar incarnation of Krishna. And we've just wrapped up that pastime. That pastime spanned, I think, six chapters of the Bhagavatam. I think it started around chapter 14. And now we're on chapter 20. Thank you, Gokul. Yeah. And this chapter starts off with, we're all the way back to the beginning narration. We're back to Shaunaka Rishi, who kicked off the whole narration at the beginning of the first canto. So we're back at the top of the nested narrations of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so this is a little complicated, right? Who's talking to whom? I had to go back through, wait a minute, who is narrating this story, and how did we get there, and how many levels are we on, and, you know, so on and so forth. And so the Bhagavatam is kind of complicated. It's kind of complicated. And here in the first verse of the 20th chapter, we're finding another complication. Shaunaka Rishi is inquiring, after the pastime of Varahadev, so Varahadev was victorious in battle over the demon Hiranyaksha, Varahadev, yay, Hiranyaksha, boo. And part of his success was not only vanquishing the demon, but he also placed the earth back in its proper orbit in the celestial regions. And so Shaunaka's inquiring, okay, what happened next? And there's a little bit of a complication here, because Shaunaka Rishi is inquiring, what did Svayambhuva Manu do next? But we are not currently under the reign of Svayambhuva Manu. We are currently in the reign of Vaivashvata Manu. And so how do we understand this? In other places in the Bhagavatam, not exactly in this purport, but Srila Prabhupada explains that this incarnation of Varahadev happens on sort of a schedule. that there wasn't only one appearance of Varahadev in this world, but he appears kind of regularly and enacts a pastime. But this pastime always has some subtle differences to it. So the pastimes of Krishna are never the same. And in this way, they never get boring. Right? There's always some subtle differences. And so that's kind of the answer to what would be otherwise seen as a paradox, or not a paradox, but maybe a misunderstanding or a confused point by Shonaka Rishi. Why is he asking about a Manu from a previous age, Svayambhuva Manu, when we are under the reign of Vaivashvata Manu? And this is a really central question, actually, to the Bhagavatam, is what happens during the reigns of the Manu. The Bhagavatam that we read covers 10 main topics. And we've covered a lot of them. I've given a whole bunch of classes to the Bhaktivedanta Academy students and adults in the community here. And we've covered many of these topics. We spoke a lot about, in the second canto, especially, we spoke a lot about the topic of Sarga, which is creation of the material world, and Utaya, which is the creative impetus behind the material world. So there's the mechanisms of creation. How did it all unfold? In my seventh grade astronomy class, we just finished studying the Big Bang. So these are the mechanisms of creation described. But what's missing from the Big Bang theory is the Utaya. What is the impetus of creation? Why did it all happen? So scientists can explain things with some degree of reasonable detail back down to about 10 to the negative 27th of a second. That's a decimal point with 25 zeros, a 2 and a 7 seconds. So that's an extremely small amount of time. And, you know, mathematically and scientifically, we can kind of explain things past that point. But nobody can explain what happened before that point. And that is Utaya, that is the creative impetus. Why was this world created? And so the Bhagavatam covers both of these things. Sarga, how the world was created, and Utaya, why the world was created, or what made the world be created to begin with. In our discussions of the Bhagavatam, we've also discussed Visarga, which is creation within the material universe. So the universe was created, but there's a lot of stuff in the universe, right? How many of you have ever looked up at the night sky? We live in a place that's really ideal for looking up at the night sky. How many of you have ever lived in a big city? Yeah, I know some of you have lived in a big city. If you live in a big city, you look up at the night sky, you can't see anything because all the lights from the big city are drowning out the stars. But if you live in a nice rural community like we do here in Alachua County, the stars are lit up every night with brilliant stars twinkling in the sky. And what is all that stuff? How did all that stuff get there? That is the question of Visarga, secondary creation. And in discussing Visarga, we come across the situation of various planetary systems within the universe. This is called Sthanam. Sthanam. This is another one of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. And here, Shonaka Rishi is asking about the reigns of Manu. Who's ruling over all these planetary systems? Manu. Not that Manu. He's not even here today. All right. He's reigning over the universe. I think it's a different Manu. This is Vaivashvata Manu, not Manu Logan. Yeah. And so here, Prabhupada very briefly describes the cycles of the reigns of Manu in the material universe. Each reign of Manu covers 4,320,000 years times 72. And he's talking about solar years, which is the length of time it takes for the Earth to start at one point, go all the way around the sun, and wind up at the same point it began. And I'll unpack that in a moment. Once again, 4,320,000 times 72 is 311,400,000 years. So that may seem like a long time, right? Even for the more aged people in our Sangha, you know, they might have been around 70 or 80 years, right? And we think, oh my God, some of these people are getting advanced in age, let's say. Or they may even feel in their own bodies they're getting advanced in age. But can you imagine living for 311,040,000 years? That is almost an inconceivable amount of time. But that's just 1/14th of the day of Lord Brahma. there are 14 Manus that appear within one day of Lord Brahma. Even within the whole, the history of the earth as we know it, 311 million years is, I'm going to do some quick math in my head, that's about 1/12 of the age of the earth. Oh, there he is. Manu appeared for us. We were just talking about you. Better late than never. That's what I always say. So even the reign of Manu is a relatively short period of time within the day of Brahma, and Brahma lives 100 days and nights of his life. That is the length of his life. This comes out to about 311 trillion years. 311 trillion years. And scientists today say that the universe we live in is a tiny fraction of that, 14 billion years or so. I'm rounding to the nearest billion. So don't quote me on that exactly. But scientists also admit that there's so much in the universe that we cannot see. And it is quite likely that there's stuff beyond our field of vision. So we can only see things that have had enough time for their light to travel from wherever they are to where we are. But if there's stuff existing beyond that, we would never be able to see it. So there's so much stuff that even with all of our scientific advancements in life, there are so much stuff that we don't know and that we will never know using the powers of our own senses. How many of you out there wear glasses? Yeah. How many of you out there sometimes when somebody says something to you, you go, what? How, what? How many of you have accidentally bumped into something? How many of you have accidentally lost something? Yeah. So our senses are imperfect, right? Even using all of our greatest technology, our senses are still limited and imperfect. The greatest telescopes we've ever made cannot see beyond the edges of the universe. And so we don't know what's out there. The most powerful microscopes we've ever made can't actually see an atom. They can only see the activity of an atom. They can see the evidence that the atom is there, but they can't see the atom itself. And so our senses are imperfect. We've all just acknowledged that. Like I wear the glasses so I can see who's messing around here in the back row. Nobody so far yet. But I can't, with the glasses on, I can't read my handwriting here on the page because my senses are imperfect. You know, we've all acknowledged sometimes people say something to us and we can't hear them. What? Huh? That's right. Or sometimes somebody says something to us and we have no idea what they're talking about. How many of you have ever taken a math class? Yeah, so you understand the principle of somebody saying something to you and having no idea what they're talking about. And it's because our senses are imperfect, we are prone to being confused, right? We're in illusion. We don't really know what's going on here. And because we're an illusion, we make mistakes all the time. And right? How many of you have ever made a mistake before? How many of you, okay, here's the follow-up question. I mentioned earlier that devotees are full of questions, so I've got lots of questions for you today. How many of you have, even though you've made a mistake, have tried to deny it or hide it? Yeah. If you're not raising your hand right now, you are trying to deny it or hide it. So that's all of us. And so this is the fourth imperfection of human life, is that we have imperfect senses. Because we have imperfect senses, we're prone to making mistakes and being confused. Yeah, but we still try to hide it or cover it up. And because of that, we are all possessed of a cheating mentality. And because of these four things, we can never really know what is what in the world without some additional help. We need the assistance of a qualified authority to reveal knowledge to us. And so the knowledge of the Bhagavatam is different from scientific knowledge, and that scientific knowledge is acquired through the vehicles of our senses, through observation and testing and inference and the power of our own minds. And this has been useful to a certain extent in human society. Prabhupada begins the Bhagavatam by saying that we are not living in the darkness of ignorance anymore, and that the scientific nature of our society has made so many advances in science and medicine and technology, in society in general. But he says that there's a pinprick in society at large, and thus large-scale wars are fought over relatively small matters. So the scientific advancement has helped our comforts in life, right? How many of you have ever gotten a homework assignment? Yeah. How many of you enjoy doing your homework assignments? And here we see the cheating mentality, trying to cover it up. Some of you enjoy doing, nobody likes doing homework. But consider this. Consider this, and this is not a threat, and this is not meant to scare anybody. This is just to provide a little bit of historical perspective on your lives. You are burdened with potentially having to do, I don't know, maybe 2 hours of homework a night, only 20 minutes of which is coming from me, I have to say. But if you were alive 100 years ago, you would be working 12 hours in a factory. And if you were born 200 years ago, you would be working 15 hours in a field, even you younger kids. And so modern society has enabled us to have this type of educational system. It's enabled us, it's freed us up from labor in order to explore higher goals, education. And what is the supreme education? So anyway, I'll get to that in a second. So science has given us that, but science cannot answer the larger questions of life. Why am I born? Right? Why do I have to get sick? Why do I have to get old? Why do I have to die? Right? These are the real problems of life. We were reading from the Prabhupada Nectar stories a couple weeks ago in one of our afternoon programs, and someone was narrating the story of Srila Prabhupada seeing a magician. And the magician was playing all kinds of tricks on Srila Prabhupada. He was like pulling quarters out of Prabhupada's ears and making stuff disappear. And the devotees were getting a little annoyed with the magician. They thought he was maybe offending Srila Prabhupada a little bit. But Prabhupada was playing along like a good sport, smiling, laughing. But at one point, his mood really changed. And he became very grave and very serious. And he said, "But do you know the magic of ending birth, death, old age, and disease? Can you make this disappear?" And the magician said, "No, I can't make..." He became very serious too, and he said, "No, I can't make these things disappear, Swamiji." But Srila Prabhupada said, "I know how to make these things disappear." Because Srila Prabhupada was revealing knowledge to us. And that's the role of Manu here. Manu in the universe sets forth the laws of mankind so which we can both take advantage of the material progress we've made and walk gradually on a path of liberation. And this gets very complicated. The laws of Manu are very complicated. There are many laws in society. Nobody can remember them all. Nobody follows them all. We're all zipping quickly down 2:35 in the morning, although that's very dangerous and you shouldn't do that. And therefore, all of this has been distilled. And there's so many religious scriptures that emanate from Manu and other sources. There's so many of them. We couldn't possibly read them all in one lifetime. And the author of many of these scriptures, the Vedic scriptures, Srila Vyasadeva, he also lamented this. I wrote so many scriptures. But I don't know what is the point of all of this. And in conversations with his guru, Narada Muni, who also revealed knowledge, he distilled all of this knowledge down into the Bhagavatam. And by the mercy of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, this Bhagavatam, which is the most advanced spiritual knowledge, the purest form of revealed knowledge existing on this planet today, he translated this into English language that we can all understand and have access to, even though we're not really qualified, right in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. It says that this scripture is meant for people who are free from envy. Excuse me. It's meant for people who are free from envy. So that's not really us, but yet we still have access to it. And simply by reading the Bhagavatam with an open mind and a happy heart, all of the secrets of the Vedic scriptures will gradually become revealed to us because our consciousness will become purified. Just in the last 5 minutes, I want to talk about one thing, which is the nature of speech. We are engaged right now in Bhagavat Katha. We are speaking about the pastimes of the Lord and the Lord's devotees and things associated with the Lord, the manvantaras, the paraphernalia of the Lord, the Bhagavatam, and so on and so forth. And by hearing this speech, by hearing this Bhagavad Gita, our minds become cleansed of all illusion and unwanted things. And so that is the path of religion in Kali Yuga. I had a student ask in a very skeptical mindset a few weeks ago, how do we know our religion is the right one, right? And this is a very good question. This is actually the same question that Sonika Rishi asked Sutta Goswami when he asked, what is the essence of all scriptures? Because there are so many scriptures and there are so many religious practices. And how do we know what the right one is? Well, the reality of the situation is that there is only one religion, and that is the religion that teaches us to love and serve God. And so by hearing about God, we automatically become attracted to loving God. Krishna is the all-attractive spiritual entity. We often hear about bridge preaching in the modern world, where we try to lure people into hearing about Krishna by hearing about things that we think may be more palatable to them to hear about. But there is nothing more palatable to hear about than Krishna, right? And so we can lead people over the bridge, and at the end of the bridge, hey, you push the microphone into my face. Thanks. But there's nothing more attractive than Krishna. When we present Krishna as he is, everybody will be attracted. This is actually another one of the questions that Sonika Rishi asks. Who would not be attracted to the pastimes of Krishna? And the answer is demons will not be attracted to the pastimes of Krishna. And we should not associate with demons. But we engage in all other kinds of speech. And that keeps us separated from Krishna. And very quickly, for the benefit of the hearers who will be here for another 3 minutes, I want to run through these kinds of speech very quickly because they're important. And I see two of them engaging in it right now. So first one, there are conversations that have no spiritual value, which is vritta galpa. These are different types of prajalpa. Prajalpa is nonsense talk. That's the opposite of Bhagavad Gita. The first one is vritta galpa, which is conversations that have no spiritual value. There's vitarka, which is arguing and quarreling about godless things, just bickering. There's parachara, which is gossip, which includes discussing other people's faults in their character. So talking about people behind their back. Do you know what this person did the other day? This person smells really bad. That person's a nonsense. I don't like the way that person wears their hair. Then there's vada anuvada. This is having a debate for the purpose of winning the debate and not for the question of establishing the truth, right? This is like political stuff. Everybody just wants to be right. Nobody wants to know what the right thing to do is. There's para-doshana shilana, which is just general fault-finding. Did you hear, general fault-finding is like projecting faults into the world. Like there's a beautiful kirtan going on, and I'm like, that kirtan, they missed this note here. Just finding the fault in what otherwise would be a beautiful presentation. And we're all guilty of all of these things. There's mitya jalpana, which is lying, not speaking the truth. There's sadhu ninda, which is offending a devotee, saying offensive things about devotees or the general association of devotees. This has been commonplace. Often Vaishnavas are ridiculed as sentimentalists or impoverished people. This is a form of sadhu ninda. And finally, there's gramya kata, which is mundane conversations, talking about wealth, talking about sports, talking about the latest PlayStation, talking about my results in Fortnite last night, talking about family life without a divine connection. This is gramya kata, village talk. And all of these are set apart from Bhagavad Gita. And when we engage in Bhagavad Gita, all of the secrets of the universe gradually become revealed to us. And when we engage in these other types of kata, all of the secrets of the universe gradually become hidden for us. So there are only very few things that you have full control over in your life. You have control of what goes into your mouth. You have control over what comes out of your mouth. And if you really want to solve the problems of material existence, you will focus on hearing and chanting Bhagavad Gita and avoid these other types of prajalpa. Thank you very much. Right on time. All right, the applause is totally unnecessary. All right. This is Gramya Katha now. You're welcome. Have a nice day. We'll be back for more math in a moment. I have another 15 minutes if we want to open this up for discussion amongst the adults. Did I have another point I wanted to make? I don't think I had another point I wanted to make. Yes, Maharaj. Thank you, Govinda.
Hare Krishna. I'm not too old to have appreciated the class.
Good. Thank you.
It was inclusive. I just wanted to share a cartoon I once saw, just a single frame cartoon, and it kind of gives some insight into the futility, if not the absurdity, of trying to understand the origin of the universe or its limits or where it came from, etc. There's a man, a little man, not too young, and he is on the roof of an apartment building, and has a telescope, you know, like a medium size, you know, kind of telescope that some people have for their hobby or something. And he's standing on top of the chair, looking through the telescope, pointing it at the moon. And the inference is pretty obvious that he's really kind of loony, because he thinks that 2 feet or so of it being closer to the moon is really going to make a difference in terms of his being able to see the moon. So I guess we could compare that with even the very sophisticated efforts of modern technology, even going into quantum physics and so many esoteric areas, that we have to hear from scripture. We just can't use our, because it's still empirical. In other words, you have your senses, and if you have some very modern, sophisticated technology that extends your senses, but you're still based on sense perception.
Yeah, this is that last point especially. This is the title of a series of lectures I gave at the Bhaktivedanta Institute last year called The Asymptotes of Knowledge. An asymptote is the graph of a curve that approaches a limit but never touches it. And so this is material knowledge. We can approach truth, but we can never really discover it for the reasons you just mentioned. In astronomy a few years ago, there was Edwin Hubble back in the 1920s who first discovered that there are galaxies outside of the ones that we live in, and he used a pretty mediocre telescope for what a telescope is now. And then, you know, 80 years later, there was a telescope launched into space that was named after him. And this telescope, the Hubble Space Telescope, discovered that not only are there a few galaxies out there, there are actually trillions of galaxies out there. They pointed the telescope at what they believed to be one of the darkest patches of the night sky, where nothing had ever been discovered before, and they aimed the telescope there just to try to calibrate the telescope. And they pointed it there, and this image, this is one of the most famous images in all of modern science, it's called the Hubble Deep Field image. This image was lit up with galaxies. So let's go further. Let's stand on the chair, right? Well, let's not get a chair. Let's get a whole ladder, right? So they launched another space telescope about 5 years ago called the James Webb Space Telescope. And this is allowing scientists to look even further into the history of the universe. But in doing this, they just become more and more confused, right? They see something and are like, oh my God, we don't even know what that is. You know, this completely changes our timeline of how the Big Bang worked. And they're bewildered. They don't know how to make heads or tails of this. And I'm reminded of a quote by John F. Kennedy when he inaugurated the Apollo program. He gave a very famous speech, one of the great speeches in presidential history, if you're a historian or into that kind of thing. He gave a speech at Rice University shortly before he was murdered, saying we're launching a program to go to the moon. And I'm not addressing whether or not they succeeded. I'm just saying he gave this speech. It's on YouTube. You can watch it. It's about 20 minutes long. And at one point, he was talking about our advancements in knowledge, just as we have been now. And he said, the more our knowledge unfurls, the greater our ignorance is revealed. The more we think we know about what's going on in this universe, the more we realize we actually don't know anything. And this is called Maya Paritagya, right? These great scientists, these great learned men, their knowledge is stolen by illusion. They look further and further and further out into the universe, and they become more and more bewildered. This is the opposite position of a devotee. A devotee just humbly hears from the scripture. And there's a visceral difference for me. I've read a lot of science books in my life, textbooks, papers, you know, journal articles. There is nothing more tedious in the world to read than a scientific journal article. It's just like, there's one thing in the world more tedious than reading a scientific journal article, which is writing a scientific journal article. And I've written scores of them, and it is just like, put me out of my misery. But we read one page of the Bhagavatam, even we don't understand what it means, with all these manus, these numbers, bhumandala, dimensions, chariots with little people flying around them. Even we don't understand what it means. Just the act of hearing from the Bhagavatam is enough to immediately remove all miseries from the heart. And so this is also pratyaksha. It's not just that, you know, we have faith by proxy in Srila Prabhupada, that I don't know what any of this means, but I have faith in Srila Prabhupada because of the own example of his life, you know, what he accomplished in his life, the mood that he set, the testimony of his disciples, right? This all gives me faith in Srila Prabhupada. But my faith in Krishna consciousness is not only by proxy in my faith in Srila Prabhupada, it is also a lived experience. We also have a lived experience of the unmitigated bliss of Krishna consciousness, even at a neophyte stage. You know, I think anybody who's ever gone out to distribute books in a bad mood has had this experience. You know, I used to distribute books in the Pacific Northwest where the weather is just bad 10 months of the year. It's just cold and rainy and gray, and the nights are long and the days are short, and sometimes going out for book distribution was just like, not again. You know, we used to carry stacks of books and we used to put plastic shopping bags over them to keep them dry, and we'd pull books off the bottom of the pack to show people, but after four or five times pulling the book off the bottom of the pack from underneath the bag, it was like soaked through, and so a lot of books got lost to the rain. But, you know, whatever austerities that may involve, after doing it for 2 minutes, they all just melted away, and we would be swept up in the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And so this requires no qualification at all. It requires no previous learning. It requires really nothing other than Shraddha. Shraddha, which is just the neophyte faith that, hey, there might be something here. And so this is such a powerful process that we should offer freely to the world. Mata, you want to say something? You have the microphone.
Thank you, Prabhu. You're so full of knowledge, scientific knowledge. What you just said just a few minutes ago, I was just thinking, when you hear how many years, one of these personalities live, Lord Brahma.
Yeah.
I go, wait a second, it's good to know it, but my thing is, how is this going to relate to me?
Yeah.
To make some spiritual advancement, to get out from this place. But, you know, the fascinating thing is I can listen to you talk and say, wow, there's so much knowledge out there. But at the end I said, how can I improve my life today, you know, from hearing the Bhagavatam? And like you said, just reading a sentence, you may not understand it, but it gives you such, it's hard to explain the feeling it gives you, like hope and happiness, that there's something there, that you don't have to understand it, but you know that because Krishna is saying the faith is there, that by understand, like they said yesterday in class, by hearing this pastime, you'll go back to Godhead at the time of death. It's so simple, but just hearing it gives you so much faith that, okay, the process is so perfect, you know? So sometimes when I hear all the scientific knowledge, I'm thinking how to put it here and there in my head. And then I said, well, it's good to hear, it's good to be knowledgeable, You know, so you can, maybe if you meet somebody like yourself, scientific person, you can say something.
Yeah.
But otherwise, just telling them, chant Hare Krishna, you know, this process, you can get to know God. It's very satisfying, too.
It's very satisfying. Yesterday, when I was preparing for the class, I was reading back through the third canto to refresh my memory of what led up to all this. And there is a lot of Visarga and Shtanam and Poshanam in the third canto, a lot of secondary creation, a lot of discussion about planetary systems, and it starts off pretty scientific, like Shankhya philosophy, like methodical, these are the elements, you know, this is how they unfold from one another. And then it starts to get into like the Ashvini Kumars entered the nostrils of Brahma, and all of these devatas and demigods that, you know, people in the West wouldn't be familiar with unless they were exposed to this, but maybe everybody in India has heard about, I don't know. And I start wondering, what is all this? And it reminded me that the universe is fundamentally personal, that all of these stars that we see up in the sky, these are not only just burning balls of hydrogen. There's a person that is embodied by that. They're all living entities, right? The Bhagavad Gita says the living entities are sarva-gata, they're everywhere. And so understanding that we live in a personal universe that's governed and administrated by people who have, yeah, inconceivably long lifetimes and have bodies that we can't really possibly conceive of. But understanding that also helps me to, first of all, remember that somebody's always watching, right? There's nothing I can really do in secret. Somebody is always watching, right? Lord Brahma knows everything that's going on in his universe. Agni is right here. And so this helps us become more personal, but it also helps us to remember who the Supreme Person is.
You know, we hear that Krishna is a taste of water.
Yeah.
My daughter just went to some book sale, and she said, you have to read this book, Mom. I said, why? He said, it described the qualities of water. Each drop of water, like a snowflake, is different. And I think, wow, this is so amazing. That's why we hear Krishna is a taste of water. It's more than just a whole Krishna personality exists in that water. The other day, one devotee was giving class, and he was saying, here in the West, we are so impersonal.
Yeah.
You know, we feel the wind, and we go, it's wind. But he says, it's a personality. The wind is a personality.
Yeah,
the water
that's right.
is a personality.
Yeah.
It blew my mind when Prabhupada said he has to remove this impersonalism from us. I was thinking, my God, these simple things, we're so impersonal. You said, a wind, we close the door, not thinking it's a personality. You know, and it just opened up a whole phase, you know. I started seeing the trees. Yes, you know that they're living entity, but to understand how they're, you know, they're living entities, it's amazing. So I feel like sometimes I want to get more into the personalism. And
Jai.
So I'm bad.
Yeah, I also, Krishna is the smell of the pure and unadulterated earth. You know, and I every time I walk through a forest, you know, the smell of a forest is overwhelming. And having had that knowledge revealed to me one time, right, having read that one time in the Bhagavad Gita, every time I walk through a forest, I can't help but remember Krishna because I'm smelling Krishna. And so it's very difficult to understand these things. You know, and a lot of devotees, especially with the work with the BI, we find a lot of devotees, they try to correlate, you know, do the reigns of the Manus line up with times of known mass extinctions on Earth and this, that, and the other thing? Or, you know, I don't know. I think this is a fairly... It's useful because we're discussing Krishna, but here's the point. Scientific knowledge will always change. That is the nature of scientific knowledge. It's not a flaw in scientific knowledge. It's designed that way. Scientists believe things tentatively until they're presented with new evidence, and then they change what they believe. And so scientific knowledge is always changing. The Bhagavat is not going to change, right? The Bhagavat is not going to change. It is Vedanta. It is conclusive knowledge. Yes, and so science has a role in the world, but it is not going to solve the problems of birth, death, old age, and disease. For that, we need the revealed knowledge of the Acharyas and Krishna himself. So, yeah. unless you want to take birth again. And the way things are going, I don't recommend it. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.